Hello and welcome to Module 1 of your Level 2 Anatomy and Physiology Revision Mastery Series. My name is Hayley Bergman and I'm going to be taking you through each of these modules that are ahead of you. But let's get cracking on the first one. This first one, we're going to be talking about the heart and circulatory system. And in order to do that, there is just one thing I need from you. I need your absolute attention. But remember, you can use this whilst you're doing other things. So you can definitely listen to me in your ears whilst you're driving, doing the washing up, etc. So make sure that you've got your undivided attention towards me as best as you possibly can. And if you miss anything, just rewind the video and go back and find the area that you really need. And that'll help you when you get through to your cheat sheets and also to through to your tasks. And that way, you know you're absorbing all the information ready for your level two anatomy and physiology exam. So in this video, we're going to be looking at being able to identify the location and function of the heart. Also, by the end of the video, you're going to be able to describe the structure of the heart and also the blood vessels that serve that heart. We're going to talk about and describe the systemic and pulmonary circulation. And on top of that, we're going to look and explain the blood pressure classifications. So you've got loads within this module that we're going to cover, but there is a cheat sheet. So if you'd like to download the cheat sheet now, you can have that alongside you whilst you study and go through the video, or you can download the cheat sheet at the very end and use it as a way of testing yourself. So two ways you can use the cheat sheet as you go. Let's get started with why we actually need to even learn about the heart and circulatory system. And I often get asked this from people that are trained to become fit pros because they're like, oh, I just want to get in the gym. I don't understand why I need to know all about the heart and circulation. But it really is a key part of anatomy and physiology. And by understanding it, it's going to help you to apply all of this to working with your fitness clients. And I'll explain as we go through what that means in relation to your clients whilst they're doing their exercise with you. But also, the heart is the life source of our body. We absolutely need to know it is functioning properly, and we need to know how it's working in the body in order to think about how we're programming for those clients as well. But understanding the fundamentals of circulation are going to add a massive string to your bow. So please don't feel that this is just a tick box exercise so you can pass your exam. It's actually a really important part of becoming a fit pro and understanding the fundamentals of the body as a fit pro. Now, let's get stuck in. Let's think about where that heart is actually located. I'm sure you are aware that your heart is underneath your rib cage and protected by what we call the sternum. Sternum is the breastbone. That's the hard bit right in the middle of your chest. You can tap that. Your heart is right behind there, as it shows in this picture, and the heart is about the size of your wrist. So it's right in the center of the chest, and it's slightly to the left, but it's totally covered by the ribs and supported by the sternum, so that means it's totally protected, which means it's not going to come into any danger. So the main areas you need to know is it's located in the chest, slightly to the left, and it's protected by ribs and sternum. It's about the same size as your fist. So let's look at the functions of the heart. Why do we even need it in the first place, let alone have to understand about it from a fitness perspective? The heart has two main functions, both of which are really one function. Its function is to pump and therefore maintain circulation. So it pumps blood. That's all the heart does. It's a great big muscle that pumps blood. It pumps blood in two different ways, as this diagram shows on your video screen right now. The one to the left, it's pumping deoxygenated blood to the lungs. And it obviously needs to be getting any of the blood that doesn't have any oxygen in it to the lungs so it can have a nice top up of oxygen so that it can then pump oxygenated blood and nutrients to the muscles and other areas in our body where we need it. So there's two functions, both of which pump, but one is deoxygenated blood to the lungs, and the other one is oxygenated and nutrients going in towards the muscles and the rest of the body. Right, so the actual features of the heart. It consists of four different chambers. So you've got two that are at the top, and we're going to go through these and show you them on a diagram in just a second. The two that are uppermost are the atria, And this is where blood is collected. So it's where the blood is received into the heart. And then there are two lower chambers. And these are the ventricles. These are in charge of the actual pumping motion. They got really strong muscles and they pump the blood up and out of the heart towards either the lungs or the body. There is also a division between left and right sides, and we'll have a look at that in a diagram in just a second. There are also four valves that we're going to have a little look at, and a really important part of the feature is that the heart itself is actually just one great big complex muscle. It is made of a very specific type of muscle, which predictably is called cardiac muscle. So we all know that the heart has the other name of being the cardiac, the cardium. So the cardiac muscle is a special type of muscle, and it's involuntary, which means thankfully we don't have to tell it to beat, we don't have to tell it to pump. It does it all itself automatically, which is fantastic, because without that we'd never get anything done. We'd always be telling our heart to pump, and it would be pretty dangerous going to sleep and switching off. But the other side of it is that it's stripy muscle, just like our skeletal muscle, just like the muscles that are, for example, in your bicep. It's got like stripy lines to it, and that's because it's got a really forceful contraction in one particular direction, and that therefore allows a really great contraction, loads of blood pumped right out of the heart. So the two key features of a cardiac muscle, only found in the heart, is that it's involuntary and it's striated, which means it's a forceful contraction. Okay, it also has its own circulation, which feeds that muscle, the heart itself. And we call this the coronary circulation. And you may well have come across this before when you talk about people, when people have spoken about coronary heart disease, for example, or they've spoken about coronary disease, etc. What this is a whole circulation network which supplies blood and nutrients to the heart muscle so that that muscle is able to contract. That's all we need to know about to start off with in terms of the basic features of the heart. But it'd be really good to have a little look at that and see how it sort of settles into actually what the heart looks like. So if you look on your video screen now, you'll see that there is a picture of the heart. And actually, it's a really great picture. Really clearly shows you all the different areas. Now, I've put on this diagram right side and left side, and I want you to focus on that for a second. Some people get very confused by the fact that as you're looking at this screen, I've written right side on the left-hand side, on your left-hand side as you're looking at it. Now, I can assure you I've not made a mistake here. This is actually the right side of the heart and the left side of the heart. Now, the reason why these appear the wrong way round is because it's not your left and right, it's the left and right of the person whose heart it is. So if you imagine for a second that you are a heart surgeon, thankfully our level 2 fitness course won't allow us to become heart surgeons after this, but imagine for a moment that you are. You want to be working on your patient, and imagine that the heart you see on the screen is your patient. Now, it's going to be their right side and their left side, which means as you look at it, it will be opposite to your left and right, obviously. So it's the left and right side of the heart itself. So I hope that clears that one up. Now, let's have a look at some of these features. As you can see, it is kind of a nice heart shape, but it's not the pretty symbol heart shape that we come across at Valentine's Day or anything like that, is it? It's kind of got these complex areas to it. It's got these different chambers. It's got arteries and veins coming in and out of it, and there's valves. So you can see all these different areas. So let's highlight through and see if we can get a little bit of clarity on actually what they are. Now, predictably, the left atrium is on the left-hand side of the heart. So you'll see it here on the right-hand side of your screen. And I've put a nice big red circle around it. This is the collecting chamber on the left-hand side of the heart. You'll notice that the blood here is red. That's a symbolism that it's fully oxygenated and it's coming into the heart. Okay, so an atrium, if any of you have ever been to the theatre before, an atrium is kind of the opening hallway. It's the area where you meet. It's the collecting chamber. And the same applies for the heart. The left atrium is the one that you see on the top right of your screen at the moment. Then we've got the left ventricle, and the blood is literally then pouring through this little valve halfway between the two into this left ventricle. Now, the ventricle, you'll notice, is a different shape, and it's kind of in a conical shape. It's ready to kind of collect it, ready for some power to go back up. And if you notice, the muscle around the outside of the whole of this ventricle is really big and thick. It's the thickest part of the muscle. And that's because it's where the most force is needed. Because as soon as this bit beats and contracts, this muscle here will contract, all this blood will go flying up through this little valve and up into this red blood vessel you can see up here, which is your aorta, which is your main artery out of the heart. So you can really kind of start to understand that it's coming in through the left atrium, goes down to the left ventricle, and then pumps up and into the rest of the body. So that is the left side of the heart. Let's go over and have a look at the right side. Now, predictably, the right atrium is going to be the uppermost chamber. So we've got our four chambers, the atriums are at the top, ventricles are at the bottom. And this time you'll notice that the blood in here is blue. Now, it's not actually going to be blue in our bodies, but it's a really great way of just indicating that it's not got any oxygen in it, which means that really we're going to show it as blue as a deoxygenated blood. So it's worked its way around the body, it's deposited the oxygen, maybe it's picked up some waste products as well, and then it fires it back into the heart, right into the right atrium. And you can see it's coming from these two veins here, which we'll go through in a little bit more detail later, but it comes one from the bottom, one from the top, but they collect in this right atrium. Once it's collected there, it's going to go down through the valve, just like it happened on the left-hand side. But this time it's going to collect in the right ventricle over here. Now you can see there's less of a wall here compared to the left-hand side. So, but we know there's still quite a bit of muscle here. There's still going to be another contraction. And this time when the ventricle pumps it out of this valve here and sends it off into the main veins, which will then service the lungs itself so that it can get that deoxygenated blood back to the lungs, and then we can start the process all over again. But it doesn't need quite as big a contraction here because it doesn't have to go around the whole body. The lungs are pretty close to the heart. So that should give you some real perspective. What I want you to do now is just look at this diagram and see if you can recall what each of those chambers are, and just have a go at labeling this diagram. So I want you to label in the left atrium, the right atrium, the left ventricle, and the right ventricle. So label those on in your own head and just work through them so that you have an understanding of where those four chambers actually sit. If you want bonus points, think about the circulation of blood through the heart. Maybe draw some arrows on your diagram. And if you're using the cheat sheet, you'll be able to download the cheat sheet to help you with that. Okay, right, let's look at the arteries in a little bit more detail before we go looking at the circulation and how this heart fits in. Now, on that last diagram, let me just hop back. This red bit right at the top, where I said it was a major blood vessel, it's the major artery leaving the heart. So it's moving away from the heart, from this left ventricle, and it's going up. Now this is the aorta, this one in particular. But what I really want to explore is that arteries will only ever move blood away from the heart. Now the easiest way to remember that is arteries start with an A, away starts with an A. Arteries move blood away from the heart, so they're carrying blood away from the heart the whole time. The aorta is the biggest of all of the arteries, and then they break down into smaller arteries as it gets towards our muscles. And the way of thinking about this is like a tree. So think of your aorta like a tree trunk. So from this tree trunk is your aorta, and then that will branch off into some arteries, which will be like the main branches. And then they're going to branch off into some arterioles, which are even smaller little branches, before we then get to the capillaries, which are like the little veins that happen within the leaves of our metaphorical tree. So just to give you a little bit of perspective, that one big aorta doesn't serve all of our tissues straight away. It has to break down into these little branches of smaller arteries and capillaries. Next one is that there is a pulmonary artery. Now, this one's a little bit different to the other arteries in the body, only in the fact that it transports deoxygenated blood, whereas all the others are transporting oxygenated blood. Just keep that in the background of your mind. When we go through the order of the circulation flow, that will make even more sense. But think about the pulmonary artery is the only one that transports deoxygenated blood. All the others are oxygenated blood, which is why arteries are often shown with that red colour. They have really thick walls, arteries, really thick walls. They're made of something called smooth muscle. So smooth muscle is different to cardiac muscle, different to skeletal muscle. And smooth muscle basically is involuntary, just like the heart is, which means that we don't have to think about it contracting. But instead of it being stripy, instead of having these lines through it, it's smooth, which means it is quite a weak undulating contraction. So it kind of has this like wave effect rather than a great big strong contraction in one direction. Now, this means that it pushes the blood through the artery. So there's actually, alongside the great big force from the heart, it's even being able to be helped on its way from this kind of movement and elasticity in the thick walls of the heart, of the arteries. Now, it's really important that these arteries do have really thick walls, especially compared to the other types of blood vessels that we have in our body. And that's because they deal with blood under its highest pressure. Remember I showed you from the ventricle, it had the strongest muscle contraction, which really pushes through. And at that point, it's the most amount of pressure in our body. And as a result, that means that we therefore need to be able to make sure that that is able to be dealt with under a high pressure, which is why those arteries have really thick walls. Now, alongside arteries, we have two other types of blood vessels. Now, the two other types of blood vessels, one is veins, and then the other one is capillaries. So we'll come to capillaries in a moment. Let's now look at veins. Veins are basically the opposite. They're the counter effect to arteries. Now, veins carry blood into the heart. So they are the vein to the heart. So you want to be thinking, a nice way of remembering this is the fact that veins have got the word in, and they carry blood into the heart. So there is no exception to the fact that veins always go in and arteries always go away. The vena cava is the biggest of the veins. And actually, I showed you this on the picture of the heart. You could see it just coming in to the right atrium. And you can see it from the top and from the bottom. That's because we've got two vena cavas. One is superior, one is inferior, and they're coming into the right atrium. And that's the biggest of all of our veins. But the pulmonary vein is the only vein that transports oxygenated blood. All the others are deoxygenated. So there's a little similarity here from what we noticed in the arteries. It's the pulmonary circulation that's kind of got something different going on in relation to oxygenated and deoxygenated compared to those happening in what we call the systemic system, which is serving our body. We'll come on to those in even more detail in just a second. Now, veins have really thin walls, and that's because they have really low pressure of blood going through them. Remember, it's only coming from the heart, it's only on its way into the heart, so it's having to return. It is very smooth muscle. It's made of smooth muscle again, which is exactly the same as the arteries, in that it's involuntary and it's a weak undulating contraction. But the valves, it also has valves, and these are a really clear, distinctive design that the hearts have, that the veins have, and that's because they prevent backflow. Now, because there's such low pressure, because the veins are returning back to the heart having been at the body, and there hasn't been a pump in the body or in those muscle tissues to allow it to go back up with force, It needs to have valves, and that's like stepping stones almost to stop it from backflowing. So as soon as it travels up through, it's got these one-way non-return valves that close and allow the blood to keep moving up towards the heart. Now, this we call venous return when the blood is on its way back to the heart. And some people have poorer levels of venous return than others, and those people get things like head rush, where you suddenly stand up and you're like, oh, wow, didn't manage to get the blood up to the heart quick enough because the blood's under such low pressure. Okay, let's look at the final type, and these are capillaries. Now, capillaries are the smallest of all of our blood vessels. So we had the arteries, we had the which carry blood away from the heart. We had veins, which carry blood into the heart. And then we have capillaries, and these are just the really small ones. So these, as part of our tree metaphor, these are basically right inside the leaves. These are the smallest little blood vessels. The walls are so thin, they're only sort of one cell thick, which allows blood and nutrients and gases to transfer between the capillaries and the area it needs to serve. So they have a really important purpose. Now, their main function is absorption and gaseous exchange. So they're going to help with moving oxygen, other gases, and also nutrients across the barrier between capillaries and the tissue that it needs to serve, or the alveoli in the lungs. Now, in the lungs, there are little air sacs called alveoli, and these are surrounded in capillaries because that allows us to get oxygen from this little air sac across into our blood flow via the capillaries. So that's why it's really important that we've got these tiny little blood vessels that are so flexible and nimble around the whole network of our muscles and body tissues. One thing that's really interesting to remember here is that we can actually develop more capillaries in our body. We can actually go and grow more. And that's exactly what exercise allows us to do. The fitter you get, the more capillarization you get in your body, which means you're able to serve those muscles and the lungs even better, which is obviously the sign of getting fitter, that you can get oxygen in and remove waste ASAP really, really easily. So that's some good stuff about capillaries. So you've got three different blood vessels. Let's see how these all fit together. Now, first of all, this is our cardiopulmonary circulation. Now, the word cardiopulmonary basically is a breakdown between the word heart, which is cardio, and pulmonary, which means lungs. So if you're not good at remembering long words, try and see it like it's a language. All you've got to do is you're learning this new language, see if it is French or German or whatever. And all you're going to do is literally transfer your translation. So cardio means heart, lungs is pulmonary. Okay, the cardiopulmonary circulation, we're going to look through and see this one. So what I first want to show you is that you've got three main areas of this diagram. At the top, you've got the lungs. In the middle, you can see these four squares, four chambers of the heart. So rather than me drawing a complicated heart, you've got a lovely picture of a box. Now, I'm a big fan of actually drawing this diagram when you first get into your exam because it's so easy to do. You can just chuck it down on paper as soon as you sit in that exam, put it on your scrap paper, then you can forget about it until you have your heart questions, and then you can come back and refer back to it. We call that a revision brain dump. So, lungs at the top, heart in the middle, and then all of the cells of your body underneath. Now, that means the muscles, it means serving of, say, your digestive system, everything you can think of that has a blood service to it. So, let's start by having a look at taking air into the body. So, I want you just to take a nice deep breath now for me. And as you do that, you're bringing air into your lungs. We're going to go into the actual nitty-gritty part of this a little bit more in module two, where we talk about the lungs. But really, take that great big breath in. Now, you've got capillaries covering all around your lungs, around these little air sacs called alveoli. And capillaries then take this oxygen across the gap from your alveoli, and they jump across into your capillaries. Now, at this point, they're full of oxygen, which is why we're going to see them as red. Then they travel down into your left atrium. I hope you're happy that this is the left atrium. Remember, it's on the left-hand side of the patient's heart, not your heart. Okay, left atrium. Follow those red arrows in. And then that arrow moves down into the left ventricle, where there is a great big pump, and that allows us to then pump oxygenated blood all the way up round and service the body. So let's have a look at what the name of those particular ones are called. This one up here is the pulmonary vein. So that first one, as it's coming from the lungs into the left atrium, is called the pulmonary vein. Now remember, pulmonary means lungs, doesn't it? And vein, remember, if it's a vein, it's got to be going into the heart. Must be going into the heart. So we know it's got to come from the lungs into the heart. Perfect. We'll keep that on the left-hand side as well. Then the one that pops out from down here, when you go from your left ventricle out towards the body, remember that it's going to be moving away from the heart. It's got to be arteries. Start off with that great big aorta and then branch that down into arteries. And these are your main branches. And then arterioles break down into even smaller branches. And then capillaries are like the little veins that are on a leaf, allowing you to serve and transport that oxygenated and nutrient-rich blood into the cells of your body so you can use it. Then we're doing our activity, whatever, we use that oxygen and we use those nutrients, which means that all we get left with is blood that has low oxygen levels, low nutrient levels, and some waste products now. So we're going to show that by painting this one blue. So you'll see a blue line coming back out. This blue circulation needs to now get back to the heart so it can be pumped to the lungs. It's not got enough energy because there's no pump in the body to get all the way back to the lungs on its own. It needs another little pump from the heart, which will allow it to get to the lungs easily. So what we're looking for here is a reverse cycle of that tree shape, whereby we start off with capillaries. So imagine you've got a capillary on one side, which is putting in nice red, rich, oxygenated blood. Then you've got your muscle in the middle. And then on the other side, you've got another capillary, but this is collecting the waste products and the less oxygenated blood. That then flows into a small branch, which we're going to call a venule. That then flows into a main branch, which we're going to call the veins. And then they flow into the vena cava, which, remember, I said was the largest of all of your veins in your body. And the vena cava is split into superior and inferior, whether it's serving the top of your body or the bottom of your body, basically. Now, this vena cava is like the tree trunk, okay? So this is then serving straight into that right atrium. Pops into the right atrium. Remember, at this point, there's still not much oxygen in it. It's still blue. Hops down into the right ventricle, and this right ventricle then contracts. That right ventricle contracting allows us to pump blood back up to the lungs. Now, remember, the blood's still going to be deoxygenated at this point, and that allows us to see it as a pulmonary artery. Now, it's a pulmonary artery because it's pulmonary, i.e. it's the lungs, and it's going away from the heart itself, so it's an artery. So you've got pulmonary arteries, pulmonary veins. One's going into the heart from the lungs. The other one's going away from the heart into the lungs. So when you've got all of these together, this can look fairly daunting. But what I would like you to do right now is to take a bit of paper or take your cheat sheet, and I want you to draw a square and quadrant right in the middle, just like I have with the heart shape. Then draw something at the top which symbolizes lungs and something at the bottom which will symbolize all the cells of the body. And then I want you to follow through and draw this exact diagram. Get used to drawing this and really follow. Make sure that you're following the arrows properly, because this is going to be a really easy way for you to jot down that exact diagram. It shouldn't take you more than a minute. And then once you've jotted that down, you can then use that exact process of jotting that down when you first get to your exam. By jotting it down straight away, when you then get a question that says to you, name the blood vessel which transfers oxygenated blood from the lungs to the left atrium, you know that that's got to be the pulmonary vein because you can see it on your diagram. So it kind of is a way of really being able to understand the circulation and how that fits in the body. But also, if you get asked a question that says, they do like this one actually in the exams, from a multiple choice point of view, you have to pick out the right order of all of the veins and the arteries and how that works through the body, you know that you can look back through your little circulation diagram and get it right. So obviously you can't take the circulation diagram in with you, but you can practice what you're going to dump on paper for when you get there. So you might, it'll be lungs, pulmonary vein, left atrium, left ventricle, aorta, arteries, arterioles, capillaries, cells of the body, capillaries, venules, veins, vena cava, right atrium, right ventricle, pulmonary artery, back to the lungs. Whew. That's your circulation system. Let's break it down even further and have a look. These two divide into really clear sections. You've got something called the pulmonary circulation and the systemic circulation. So let's start with pulmonary. Remember, that means lungs. That's going to be the lungs, the pulmonary vein, and then into the left atrium. Whereas, and then the other side of it is going to just be the bit concerning the lungs, is your pulmonary artery, which you can see on the left-hand side of your screen, and it's coming out of the right ventricle up towards the lungs. Systemic circulation is obviously the other part to that. That's the bit that's serving the body itself. Now, there is one key difference, really, between the pulmonary circulation and the systemic circulation. What I want you to notice is that here on pulmonary circulation, the pulmonary vein is oxygenated and the pulmonary artery is deoxygenated. Now, if we move down here, can you see that down here, your aorta and your arteries in your systemic circulation are now oxygenated because they're coming away from the heart? And then your veins on this side in your systemic circulation are now deoxygenated. So most of the veins in your body will be deoxygenated and most of your arteries in your body will be oxygenated. However, except for those in your pulmonary circulation, which are the ones that service the lungs. There you go. Nice, easy way to remember them. So let's look at blood pressure. The blood pressure within the blood pressure of our body, we often talk about blood pressure in relation to health. So you might have heard that your great auntie or your uncle or a family friend has high blood pressure. Now, high blood pressure is just a measurement that's taken when you're at rest and then compared to normative data. But blood pressure really does show the state of what's going on inside those arteries. It's the pressure within the arteries themselves. Now, we know arteries are coming away from the heart, so that's when we're measuring that pressure. And the pressure itself is produced by the contraction of the heart. So every time you hear that boom-boom, boom-boom, that's your heart contracting. So as that heart contracts, you're then able, the pressure within the artery, it will increase, wouldn't it? So there are two measurements that we take. And you usually take these measurements whilst totally rested. And you can use a blood pressure monitor that either goes around the upper arm or around the wrist. Now, you've probably come across these in doctor's surgery or even at your gym before. It will give you two measurements. The first one is systolic pressure. Okay, this is when the heart is contracting. That's at that moment where it goes, that contraction moment. As that heart contracts, you can imagine that the pressure in the arteries has got to be at its highest level because it's pushing all of that blood straight out with a really strong contraction. So that's our gauge at the most pressure you'll ever get in the arteries at that point. Then the second measurement is a diastolic pressure, and that's taken for when the heart relaxes. So that's that moment in between beats when the heart is just filling up with blood ready to contract, but it's not totally contracting, it's dilated. So diastolic equals dilated. There's a nice easy way to remember it there. So whilst diastolic pressure is happening, that's going to be the lowest pressure in our arteries that we'll ever get to. So these two together allows us to see the state that our clients have, the state of our clients' arteries, really. And the reason why it's so important is because due to lifestyle factors, due to smoking, lack of exercise, problems in different fat levels, different types of foods, all sorts of different lifestyle factors, which we'll go into. Due to these factors, people get a buildup of fatty deposits around the arteries, which will lead to an abnormally high blood pressure. So actually, we can just take a really simple blood pressure measurement and actually find out what's going in their heart and in those arteries. Now, you might go, why do I even need to know this? Okay, it's great to see that they're fit and healthy. You can see that them, can they run up the stairs? But actually, this is about their risk. This is about their risk of whether they're going to have a heart attack on your session. So it's really important to take these measurements before you're working with them. There are some people you're able to work with and some people you are not able to work with. So we're going to look at that in more detail. But also, it's key to recognize that regular exercise can lead to the reduction or normalizing of those with high blood pressure. So it's seeing exercise as a treatment for high blood pressure as well, or for slightly raised blood pressure. So let's look at these classifications. Now, the risks of having high blood pressure. So high blood pressure has another name. We're going to call it hypertension. So think of when you're hyper as a kid, you're going hyper because you've got loads of E numbers in your diet, for example, loads and loads of sugars. That's going hyper. That's more than, extra, compared to hypo, which means low. So hypo is low, hyper is more. And they're really key ways to just think about the difference. Hypertension is high blood pressure. Okay. The risks of hypertension include things like cardiovascular disease, having a heart attack, having a stroke, or having kidney dysfunction as well. There's loads more. But if someone's got hypertension, and then they are more likely to have these four things going on in the future, if not straight away. Now, when we're analysing the systolic and diastolic blood pressures, we need to know what optimal is, partly because of when we're working with clients, but we also need to know optimal because it'll ask you it in the exam, I promise. But there's also a lovely way of remembering it. And that one, before I go into the great big table at the bottom of this slide, I want to show you the green box at the top. There is one great big rule of thumb, and this is just the easiest way to remember who you are good to train. So when you're testing your clients, if they come out with a systolic blood pressure of 120 to 140, and then a diastolic of 70 to 90, they're good to go. And that's a really key rule of thumb. So if they're 120 to 140 over 70 to 90, they are good to go. If they're below that, it's what we call hypotension. So it means that someone's got really low blood pressure. Now, low blood pressure isn't a reason not to work with someone. However, it is a reason for concern, especially if it's very low, because they'll have things like head rush when they get from the floor up to standing. So don't make them do lots of burpees or lots of sit-ups on the floor and then suddenly get them running, because they'll pass out on you, because the venous return hasn't got back up towards their head quick enough or their heart quick enough, which means that their body literally presses the reset button, puts them on the floor so that they can restabilize hypertension, their hypotension, which is their low blood pressure, restabilize, and then they're good to go again. So you've got to be really careful with those with low blood pressure. Now, normal is what we call less than 120 over and less than 80. But what we're going for optimal, something that's really key to remember, is 120 over 80. So 120 on systole, 80 on diastole is what we're optimally aiming for everybody we're working with. But some people will be either side of that. Now, we can work with people that are pre-hypertension. This just means that they're on their way towards maybe becoming a little bit more high blood pressure. These are the people that it's really great for us to work at level two because it allows us to actually improve their health. Now they're at a point where we can go, cool, we can get that blood pressure back down to optimal just with some exercise, some changes to nutrition, and you're going to prevent them from becoming dangerously ill with hypertension. So this is pre-hypertension goes all the way basically up to 140 over 90. Now, if you look back at your rule of thumb, that comes back to that 140 over 90. That's the top end that you're going to take. Then you've got stage one and stage two hypertension. These guys, we're not going to train. At level two, if someone comes to you and they have high blood pressure, then really what we're saying is that the pressure in their arteries, when they're resting, remember, is quite high. It's quite alarming. Therefore, we're a little bit worried that if we get them running on the treadmill, we get them doing a Tabata, we get them doing a ton of burpees, that they're going to have a heart attack on us or even a stroke or have some other problems. So what we're going to do with those ones is we're going to refer them on to a GP, or allow them to work with a specialist in that area, which would be an exercise referral instructor, for example. So for you at level two, you're going to be looking at not working with anyone with blood pressure more than 140 over 90. Now, it is key that you understand the different stages, stage one and stage two. Now, really, for this point of view, it's for the exam. Quite often, they will give you a blood pressure and ask you which stage it is in this table. So they might give you, for example, what is 145 over 95? And you turn and go, that's stage one hypertension. Or, for example, what is 120 over 80? Oh, that's optimal or normal. Okay, so when you're breaking it down, it gives you an idea. Now, I'm going to add one more piece of information to this blood pressure one. Your concentration has been epic so far, so well done. The information here is if your client's reading doesn't fit neatly into these boxes, which is a pain, I have to admit, but that's people for you. We're working with people, and they don't always fit neatly into boxes. So if, for example, their systolic blood pressure is, let's go with 125, but their diastolic is actually 95. Can you see how now that pushes them into stage one hypertension? Although systolic is in pre-hypertension, that says we can work with them. Their diastolic is too high for us to work with them. And you always go for the larger number. So if, for example, it's pushing it into stage one hypertension, we go with that bottom level. We go with that stage one. If, for example, we don't round down, so to speak, down to being safe, we always keep it on the air of caution. Hope that makes sense. So, for example, if you have someone that has a blood pressure of 155 over 110, then we know they're in stage two hypertension. We can't work with them at all. They definitely need to go and get some help. So really think about blood pressure. Spend some time looking at this table so you can get to grips with it, and it will definitely sink in. But the rule of thumb will definitely help you. 120 to 140 for systole, 70 to 90 for diastole. They're the people you can work with, and that includes normal and pre-hypertensive clients. But your stage one, stage two, we don't work with. Okay, right. Let's look at how we actually adapt when we exercise. So I've already said that exercise is really great. We all need to be doing it, and it can help us with our blood pressure. But why? What's actually going on in the body, and what are the adaptations that happen from doing regular exercise? So these are your big whys your clients should be training. You're going to get stronger heart contractions. So remember I showed you that muscle that was all the way around the heart? That contraction gets stronger, which means that actually, you need less beats just to keep your body going at rest. So your resting pulse rate will decrease, it will go down. And similarly, you'll probably get a reduction in your beats per minute whilst you're exercising. So if you ever wear a heart rate monitor, as you get fitter, you might now be able to run at the same speed, but at a lower heart rate. The other thing that increases is your stroke volume. And this is partly a result of your heart contraction getting stronger. And this means that it's going to pump out more liters of blood per heartbeat. So for every stroke, there is more volume of blood, increased stroke volume. The other thing that increases is your cardiac output. So think heart output. Heart output, cardiac output is basically your stroke volume and your beats per minute. So actually we can times it by our beats per minute. So you get stroke volume times beats per minute and you end up with your cardiac output. Now we're not going to get technical and we're not going to go through and measure someone's stroke volume. But if we really want to get technical, we were going for a doctorate, we probably would be able to do that. And that allows us just to see if someone's cardiac output is increased. But for now, trust me, it definitely increases, which means that you're getting more blood out from your heart more efficiently with just one beat. So the more beats you do, the more blood you're managing to get out and about the body. We also become more efficient at delivering oxygen and nutrients to the tissues in the body because this great big heart beats even stronger. And we get more efficient at removing waste products from the body. And we get more capillaries in our body as well. So I mentioned that earlier, and these are these little tiny blood vessels that go around our whole body. The more of those we have, the better circulation we get to our muscles, we get to our lungs, which allow for this more efficient of delivery and removal. Also, we can reduce or normalize blood pressure, just like we were talking about a moment ago in the blood pressure section. We're also able to increase gaseous exchange efficiency. And that's because there's more capillaries going on all the way around our alveoli. And that means we can hop gas over to there even easier. And we can get rid of the rubbish stuff even easier because there's more surface area and more capillaries attached to it. And then the final one that gets increased is an increase in red blood cells. Now, this is obviously linked to our diet as well, but red blood cells carry oxygen. So if we get more red blood cells, we actually get better at carrying oxygen. So all of this compounds together to a leaner, fitter, faster version of you as a result of exercising. And that's why we literally get fitter. We're just getting more efficient. That's all we're doing. We're getting more efficient at using fuel sources, so oxygen and nutrients, and more efficient at getting rid of waste products. So we have something called a VO2 max, the volume of oxygen that is taken into the body, transported around the body, used, and then the efficiency for that then to get out back out the body as well, and the waste products to be removed. That VO2 max is a symbolism of our fitness, and we'll do that in our fitness tests so you understand about VO2 max. Now, this brings us to the end of this module. It's been a fairly long video, actually, which allows you to really get into it, but make sure you go back over the areas that maybe you were less confident on. Definitely download and complete the cheat sheet if you haven't already. If you have done it whilst you've gone through, I really advise just downloading it again, maybe printing it off and testing yourself using it, because it'll allow you to check through and check that you've actually understood it. If you have any questions, you can get hold of us. But you should now be confident with the outcomes that we set out. So what we looked at was identifying the location and the function of the heart. Could you do that? Should be able to describe the structure of the heart and describe the structure of the blood vessels that we have. Remember, we've got three different types of blood vessels in the body. Describe what the systemic circulation is and what the pulmonary circulation is. You should be able to explain what blood pressure classifications are and recognize a normal blood pressure reading. And obviously, you should have downloaded the cheat sheet and started work through those. So I hope you found this really, really useful. No doubt you have, because sometimes the heart actually needs a kind of moving video and someone to go through it. A book sometimes just doesn't do it justice. So I hope it's really helped you with it. If you have any questions, you can get hold of me, info@parallel-coaching.com, and I'd be really, really happy to help. Similarly, if you want to reach out for a quick chat, that's fine too. Send it over on the email saying you'd like to have a quick catch up and we'll talk through any areas that you're stuck on. Other than that, make sure you go over it at least one more time before attempting any of your mock questions, because it will really help it sink back in. Remember, you can do it whilst you're doing other things as well, which means that you can save on your time. You don't have to be looking at the screen in order to learn and revise about your heart and circulatory system. So following that, you'll absolutely smash your exam, I am positive. So let us know how you get on. Take care. Bye.